Hello, this is Martin Mortel, Director of UK and European Research at Glass Lewis. Today, I'll be chatting with a number of Glass Lewis analysts by way of our 2019 European proxy season preview. Over the course of the next 30 minutes or so, we'll be discussing board composition and diversity and getting an overview of code and regulatory updates across Europe. First up, though, we'll be discussing capital authorities with Chris Rushton, our lead analyst for Germany, Austria and Switzerland, and Simona Rubino, our senior analyst for Italy, both of whom have spent a great deal of time in recent months engaging with issuers and investors on this and other topics. Chris.
One topic which we believe may be a cause of some shareholder dissent at 2019 AGMs on the continent is that of authorities for companies to raise capital through the issuance of new shares. While these authorities take different forms across Europe with different legal requirements and different best practice recommendations in play, we've observed that investor expectations are tightening, support levels are falling, and in some markets, these authorities are starting to become contentious AGM agenda items.
You say that investor expectations are tightening. In what way exactly?
Well, the views of institutional investors in particular are becoming increasingly heterogeneous, so it's difficult to answer this with a blanket statement. But the crux of the issue appears to be the limits to which companies would be permitted to issue shares without preemptive rights. Or in other words, the ability for companies to offer shares to a specific group, which leads to a dilution of the holdings of existing shareholders. There are many reasons that companies do this, with the most common being to raise capital quickly against cash contributions, to issue shares to management and other employees as part of incentive plans, and to issue shares against contributions in kind as part of an acquisition or a merger. From engaging with corporate issuers across Europe, the most common feedback that we've received is that investors are becoming less willing to accept the potential of high levels of dilution through new share issuances.
Why is that exactly?
That's a difficult question to answer in a way that would apply to all shareholders. Obviously, high levels of dilution reduce the power of existing shareholders. For example, their voting rights at general meetings are going to be worth less than they were before, and the dividend pool has to then be shared amongst the bigger group. Also, if a large issuance without preemptive rights is made to a single shareholder, this could lead to a substantial change in the shareholder structure and the power dynamics in the company as well. But a more pressing reason may be that if companies aren't able to make large issuances as part of acquisitions or other important corporate actions, it will force them to come back to shareholders to seek approval for capital raising measures for a specific transaction.
Is that in shareholders' best interests that companies hold an EGM to propose capital authorities as part of large deals?
Again, I think that depends a lot on who you talk to. You have to take into consideration the cost of convening an EGM and the potential opportunity cost in preparing the authority request and getting shareholder approval. The uncertainty of approval as well and the time delay could lead to deals that may be in shareholders' best interests either falling through or not being entered into in the first place. However, there are some prime examples of large corporate actions where there were grave concerns as to the rationale of the deal among a portion of the shareholder population at least. But the company was able to raise the necessary finance through using an existing authority. Depending on the structure of a deal and the country in which it occurs, explicit shareholder approval is not always required if the financing is already available. I guess the standout recent example here would be the Bayer and Monsanto merger. Obviously, this is a massive transaction which required a number of financing measures. But shortly after the merger was agreed, Bayer was able to issue a $4 billion mandatory convertible bond without preemptive rights using a previously approved capital authority, which was the first big step in funding the deal. If Bayer had been required to convene an EGM to seek shareholder approval of this capital measure, it would have given all of the shareholders the ability to question management and discuss the strategic rationale of the deal, as well as the ability for them to vote on the capital proposal itself.
It does sound like there are some pros and cons. Are there any other aspects of such authorities that are problematic for shareholders?
As I understand it, the length of authorities to issue shares, as well as the absolute size of the potential issuance, even if preemptive rights would be guaranteed, may also be a sticking point for some shareholders. In countries like Spain and Germany, companies may request authorization to issue shares up to 50% of outstanding share capital, with the authority remaining valid for up to 5 years. When companies hold a substantial rights issuance, shareholders have to decide whether to pump in more money or accept a substantial dilution to their stake. For some shareholders, both of these options may actually appear unappealing to them, particularly when it isn't clear at the time of the authority being proposed what situations may arise in the future that may lead the company to fully utilise the authority. With this uncertainty, there also seems to be a desire from some shareholders for companies to come back to reconfirm these authorities on a more regular basis.
Simona, do you have any insight into how contentious these proposals are becoming? Is there actually a risk that some won't pass?
There is a real risk that some capital proposal may not receive sufficient shareholder support this year, and there were already a handful last year that either just crept through, were removed from the agenda prior to the meeting, or which actually failed. But this depends a lot on the market. For example, in Spain, a simple majority of votes cast at an AGM is sufficient, so even with substantial dissent, we are unlikely to see any proposal getting overturned. The required support in France, Benelux, and Switzerland is 2/3 of votes cast, which makes it a little tighter. But in Germany, in Austria, capital authorities require the support of 3/4 of the vote cast, meaning that companies with a high free float in these markets are particularly at risk.
And how are companies reacting to this?
We have seen mixed reactions from companies with which we engaged. For some companies, a high level of dissent or even a failed proposal wasn't seen as being particularly problematic. These companies, however, tended to be operating in industry that aren't very capital intensive, and the proposed authorities were seen more as something that is nice to have rather than essential. However, most companies with which we have discussed this topic told us that have conducted active outreach with their shareholder base to try to understand their perspectives and to get a reasonable idea how to structure their authorities to get sufficient support.
So some companies are changing the terms of the proposed authorities.
Exactly. In Germany and Spain, for example, it was common market practice to request an authority to issue shares up to 50% of issued share capital with preemptive rights and 20% without preemptive rights. Even last year, there was an uptick in companies lowering the limit of issuances without preemptive rights to 10%, and noticeable trend in the reduction of the limits for issuances with preemptive rights too.
And how do companies feel about this?
Well, there definitely does appear to be some understanding, particularly from companies that have taken the time to discuss this issue with their shareholders. However, a number of companies, particularly those operating in capital-intensive industries, in markets that require qualified majority of shareholder support for capital authorities, have expressed their concern that it could become a source of competitive disadvantage if their proposals aren't passed or if they have to substantially restrict the terms of them. Furthermore, some companies have reported frustration that some of their shareholders don't appear to be willing to offer leeway in their policies on authorities to issue shares, even when, in their view, there are mitigating circumstances to seek higher limits and no evidence that the company has abused these authorities in the past.
So what do you expect to see this year on the continent?
Basically, I think we can expect the trend of companies seeking approval of authorities with more restrictive terms than in the past to continue. Companies with a high free float, particularly in markets that require a qualified majority of shareholder support, may also be in for a nasty surprise if they don't adapt to the changing investor expectations.
Simona, Chris, thank you both very much. I'm back with Elena Leofanti, who manages several of our European research teams, and Anna Jureva, an analyst on our Dutch and Belgian research team, to discuss board diversity. A key focal point for shareholders when assessing corporate governance in investee companies is board composition. Discussion of board composition has been historically focused on gender diversity. However, shareholders are more and more looking to better assess board diversity in the broadest sense possible. Elena, what's the current situation in Europe?
In recent years, many stakeholders have advocated for more female representation on the boards of public companies. This effort, which is materialized in the form of new recommendation and legal requirements in a number of markets, will most likely continue across Europe. In the past 3 years, female representation at board level has seen a slow but steady increase. Countries such as France, Germany and Italy have been leading the way in this regard, with only the Netherlands reporting a slight decrease in the percentage of female representation at both blue-chip and mid-cap companies.
Anna, what's the regulatory framework in the Netherlands and how do we approach gender diversity at Dutch companies?
So, Dutch legislation, in line with local corporate governance recommendations, contains a transitional clause regarding gender diversity, pursuant to which at least 30% of directorships shall be held by women and at least 30% by men. This provision was initially introduced in 2013 and expired in 2016, and was subsequently reintroduced in April 2017. In light of the current level of diversity of the Dutch market, it is likely that further legislation will be introduced at the expiry of the transitional provision on January 1, 2020. As a result, from 2019, when a board fails to meet the standard and has not disclosed any cogent explanation or plan to address a relative lack of gender diversity, we'll recommend voting against the nominating committee chair.
Have we updated our policy guidelines for any particular markets ahead of the forthcoming proxy season?
Yes, for the German market, we've tightened our guidelines in relation to board skills and diversity. In Germany, companies with over 2,000 employees and a 50-50 mix of shareholder and employee representatives on the supervisory board are required to work towards a minimum 30% representation of both genders as board seats come available, while all other companies just have to set non-binding targets for female representation. For these smaller companies, there are currently no widely accepted best practice recommendation. But given substantial market practice improvements, we will now recommend that shareholders hold the nominating committee chair accountable when a supervisory board consisting of six or more directors is all male, unless a target to change the status quo has been set and the board provides a compelling reason for why no female candidates are being proposed at this time.
Anna, Elena mentioned that recommendations and legal requirements regarding diversity at board level will continue to strengthen in Europe. Can you provide an example?
Yeah, a good example is Switzerland, where female representation at board level is lagging many of its neighbours, possibly because there is currently no legal requirement or challenging best practice recommendation. Currently, the Swiss code simply recommends that the board should be composed of directors of both genders. While many of the larger, more international Swiss companies have already taken positive steps to enhance diversity, there are a large number of Swiss boards where women are chronically underrepresented. In response, the Swiss government is currently working on a proposal which may introduce a comply or explain measure recommending at least 30% representation of each gender at board level and at least 20% representation at executive committee level. Companies that fail to hit this target would not face sanctions, but would be required to explain why they had failed to ensure increased female representation and to outline what measures are being taken to advance women in their organization. In the meantime, we will generally recommend that shareholders hold the nominating committee chair accountable at companies with all male boards in the absence of a stated plan to increase female representation in the near term.
I believe there have been some changes in Italy too.
Yes. Italian law requires that the less represented gender constitutes at least one third of boards of directors and boards of statutory auditors. To address the fact that this law will lapse in 2022, the Italian Corporate Governance Code has also introduced a one-third diversity quota. The code also recommends that companies should provide a description of their policy on board diversity as regards age, gender, managerial skills, professional qualification, and international background, as well as a description of the implementation and results of the application of such policy. If no policy is applied, companies should disclose the rationale behind this decision. In addition, in line with the updated code, shareholders presenting a list for the election of the board of directors should disclose whether the composition of the list is aligned with the company's gender diversity policy.
Anna, Elena mentioned that the Italian code now includes a recommendation for companies to create a board diversity policy in a broader sense, similar to that introduced into the German Corporate Governance Code in 2017. This recommends that supervisory boards create a profile of its skills and experience, which should be taken into account when new candidates are being proposed to the board. Is this a response to heightened investor scrutiny of board diversity?
Oh yes, definitely. It has become a mainstream belief that having an appropriate mix of certain attributes on the board, in particular skills, experience, diversity and independence, is essential to ensure that the board as a whole can satisfactorily perform its oversight duty, have informed opinions on all topics relevant to the company, and effectively advise management on important strategic decisions. Investors' expectations of boards have never been higher, with their role having evolved from primarily one of a watchdog to strategic leadership. To reflect this focus, we followed on a previous policy update by which we codified our assessment of board skills as an integral part of the analysis of proposals to elect directors. As such, we have clarified our expectations that companies listed on a blue chip index in Europe provide particularly meaningful disclosure in line with developing best practice standards. If a board has failed to address material concerns regarding the mix of skills and experience of the non-executive element of the board, we'll consider recommending voting against the chair of the nominating committee or equivalent, such as the board chair. Further, we have now expanded our coverage to include a board skill metrics for all European and Russian blue chip companies.
Anna, Elena, thank you very much. Next up, to provide an overview of various regulatory updates across Europe, are Matti Jäkelä, our lead analyst for the Iberian markets, and Marie Romer, an analyst on our Germanic research team. Matti, several countries have updated or are in the process of updating their corporate governance codes and companies laws. What are the highlights?
In France, AFEP, the French Association of Large Companies, and MEDEF, the Movement of Enterprises of France, have published an updated version of their corporate governance code, which is followed by virtually all large and mid-cap companies. This is the fourth revision of the code in just 5 years, and many of the newest changes deal with the integration of environmental and social factors into governance and remuneration structures, as well as how shareholders may engage with boards. While these updates have been welcomed by investors, many feel that they had been somewhat excluded from the drafting process. Interestingly, the most significant change made to the proposed text was made long after the consultation period closed, when the language around non-competition agreement was tightened following uproar over Carrefour CEO Georges Plassat's exit payments.
Do you expect these changes to significantly affect the forthcoming proxy season?
The proposed changes are reflective of already established market practice in France, and it is unlikely that they will significantly impact voting matters this year. CSR-related metrics are already present in about 80% of executive compensation plans at blue-chip companies, and 25 of the 35 France-domiciled companies of the CAC 40 have a board-level committee overseeing environmental and social issues. The new code is more an attempt to adapt to a new investment and regulatory landscape, and to push companies to take account of their responsibilities to the wider society, not just to shareholders.
Marie, what are the main developments in Germany?
Well, in 2018, a working group of German corporate governance experts issued new guidelines for sustainable management board remuneration systems. These guidelines, they are promoting the implementation of principles contained in the EU Shareholder Rights Directive, and they are anticipating many of the regulatory changes expected in 2019. The guidelines focus on long-term remuneration, the use of sustainability indicators alongside strategic and financial objectives under long-term incentive plans, and in addition recommend the establishment of share ownership guidelines for management board members.
Do we also expect changes to the German Corporate Governance Code itself?
Yes. The consultation phase on changes to the code has recently finished, and this may turn out to be the largest overhaul of the code since its inception in 2002. Among the proposed changes is the introduction of apply and explain principles, which invite companies to provide further disclosure on decisions taken on their governance structures. We are expecting the final version of the code sometime this summer. As such, these changes won't impact the 2019 proxy season.
Have any other countries made changes to their corporate governance codes recently?
Portugal, Denmark and Norway have all seen changes to their corporate governance codes, which will take effect this proxy season. In Portugal, the most significant change has been the establishment of minimum board independence requirement. The code now states that boards should be at least one-third independent. However, this recommendation has since been watered down by the Commission for the Monitoring of the Code, which has clarified that executive directors are to be excluded from this independence calculation. Regardless, we still expect that at least 25% of total board seats be occupied by independent directors. In Denmark, the updated code requires that boards consist solely of non-executive directors and that retiring CEOs should not go on to become chair or deputy chair. Most Danish companies do not actually have any executive directors, but there will be implications for the likes of Rockwool International, where executives serve on the board. The remuneration policy should now also be approved by shareholders at least every 4 years, and companies should also provide an annual remuneration report. The timing of these changes have frustrated a number of issuers, given that the Shareholder Rights Directive has not yet become a law. In Norway, the code removes the requirement for companies to have just one class of shares. In addition, the nomination committee will be required to provide greater disclosure around individual candidates for election to the board of directors. Also, in Greece, there has been an update to the near 100-year-old corporate law, which is intended to create a more business-friendly environment that harmonizes with European legislation and Shareholder Rights Directive. The updated requirements mandate say-on-pay for listed companies, where the remuneration policy must be submitted for binding shareholder approval every 4 years, plus an annual advisory vote on the implementation thereof.
Marie, are there any other markets where the Shareholder Rights Directive will result in an increased number of say-on-pay proposals this year?
No, not this year, but we are likely to see an increase in 2020. In Italy, there's currently an annual advisory vote on the implementation of a company's remuneration policy. However, the implementation of the Shareholder Rights Directive will introduce a separate advisory vote on the remuneration policy itself, which shall happen at least every 3 years and at the time of any proposed changes. Germany is looking to take a similar approach, an advisory vote on policy every 3 years and for the remuneration report annually. In Finland, where shareholders currently do not have the opportunity to vote on remuneration proposals other than option plans and directors' fees, several issuers have informed us that they intend to present remuneration reports for shareholders' approval this year as a trial run in advance of the required vote in 2020.
Matti, are there any developments in Spain that we should be aware of?
Potentially the most significant change in Spain this proxy season, and hopefully an improvement, is the Securities Market Commission, CNMV, allowing companies to provide free format corporate governance and remuneration reports instead of sticking to the standard CNMV provided reporting format. That's a welcome change for both issuers and investors. The companies can disclose their free format reports with an annex in table format with mostly numerical information required by the regulator. While the effect on disclosure when it comes to corporate governance report is fairly small, there is a lot of potential to improve reporting of remuneration matters.
Do you think many issuers will take advantage of this more flexible reporting regime?
It is difficult to estimate how many companies will take advantage of this freedom in disclosure, but judging from our engagement meetings, it appears that several large cap companies with more complex remuneration structures, as well as companies that have previously garnered significant opposition to their remuneration proposals, will take the opportunity to tell their stories in more detail. However, the vast majority of companies are likely to take a wait-and-see approach.
Marie, countries such as France, Italy and the Netherlands allow for so-called loyalty shares, which provide additional voting rights for long-term investors. Have there been any developments on this front?
Currently, Belgian corporate law does not provide for the use of double voting rights. The new draft of the Companies Code, however, includes the potential for shares to carry double voting rights, provided that the shares have been held by the same shareholder for an uninterrupted period of 2 years. The introduction of such loyalty shares would, however, require approval of a two-thirds majority of shareholders to approve the required amendments to a company's articles of association. These proposals are currently in limbo, however, due to the caretaker nature of Belgium's current government.
What is Glass Lewis's position on double voting rights?
Glass-Lewis is generally opposed to measures that treat shareholders unequally. As such, we do not favor the creation or extension of multiple classes of stock, which we believe to be detrimental to the equal exercise of shareholder rights. Notably, institutional shareholders are often unable to benefit from such loyalty initiatives due to the administrative hurdles to maintaining registered shares in a single account over a long period of time. We believe that voting rights that correspond with the shareholders' beneficial ownership generally operate as a safeguard for common shareholders by ensuring that even those who hold a minority of shares are able to weigh in on issues set forth by the board, especially in regard to director elections. Elimination of dual share and voting class structures creates an even playing field for all shareholders, as well as a board that is more responsive to all shareholders. As such, we will recommend shareholders vote against the implementation of provisions relating to such loyalty initiatives into a company's articles of association. Further, in France, where a company already has double voting rights and is proposing to amend the holding period required to take advantage of them, we will support proposals that shorten the holding period. While we oppose the granting of double voting rights, we believe a shorter holding period allows more shareholders to benefit from such provisions where they already exist.
Good to know. Marie, Matty, thank you both very much.
This recording should not be considered a solicitation of proxies by Glass Lewis. Glass Lewis has not sought permission to do so from the SEC, nor will it. This recording is for information purposes only and should not be construed as providing investment advice. In addition, Glass Lewis makes no representation regarding the accuracy, completeness, or reliability of any statement of any of our speakers in this recording. If you have any questions, please contact us via our website, www.glasslewis.com.